hours of talk and music, debate and discussion. Stay with me.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe.
Shop downtown, and sometimes we just hang around. But when we get tired and we want to sit, the cops say get up and move it. 'Cause there's no sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and slackers, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. Now you better watch out where you set your tail, or you might spend 6 months sitting in jail. If you bum spare change, you might pay a fine, 'cause being poor is now a crime. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and socceroos, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. You're breaking the law if you try to sit, but we're not gonna stand for it. This sitting law didn't get my vote, so we're gonna sit down and rock the boat. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sockeroos, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sockeroos, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. There ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. Ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz.
And that was Mark Levy from Born to be Wired, his opening song, No Sittin' in Santa Cruz. Great song. He wrote it for the sitting demonstrations of 1994 after the city council passed its infamous sitting ban, making it illegal to sit down on the side of the sidewalk, an attempt to placate merchant pressure concerned with unsightly people in downtown Santa Cruz. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, for this two-and-a-half-hour version on April 12th of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor here in Santa Cruz and anywhere else that we can get information on. In fact, we're going to be talking about other places in this show today, playing lots of interviews, and we actually have a couple of live guests scheduled. You're scheduled as well, if you want. Actually, you're unscheduled, but you're welcome. If you want to be a part of this discussion, you can give us a call at 423-5361. That's our call-in line here at the studio of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 5361, and our lines are open. So if you want to discuss anything you've heard so far, whether it be our choice of music or, hey, the sitting ban in Santa Cruz, please give us a call. We're going to be covering a number of subjects. Yesterday we had a meeting on Button Street, which, as you may remember if you're reading the papers, is the site of the latest police shooting here in Santa Cruz. Mid-March, police shot 4 or 5 times, we're not entirely sure yet, Brian Andrus, a man who was in his house. He had had a bad day, very bad day, locked his keys in his car, actually broken his car window to get into his keys. He was angry about it. He was upset. He came home. His wife, Lori, calmed him down. But the next thing they knew, police were at the door. Officer Gerazio forced his way into the house, even though Lori Andrus, Brian's wife, assured Officer Gerazio all was well, both from the window and from the door. Gerazio grabbed her, pushed her into the house, pulled her hands up above her head, by her testimony, and even by, I guess, the testimony of Gerazio, though it's not clear since the reports by Gerazio and the 3 other officers involved were still being kept from the defense as of early last week. I think they finally got those reports a month late. Anyway, what happened was Brian Andrus came down angry to defend his wife. Some testimony said he had a bat in his hand. Some testimony said he didn't. All testimony except the police that we've heard agrees that he struck no police officer that anyone could see. And there were 4 children watching the house, 2 from a very close vantage point, 2 from, I think, 1 from across the street. There was another adult, the child's mother, also watching the house. And no one that we know of yet, I've been able to interview, saw Brian Andrus strike any of the police officers, though that is their claim, that they were injured and as a consequence they feared for their safety and they shot him 4 or 5 times, firing 8 to 10 bullets in a neighborhood teeming with children who were less than 30 feet away. Bullets eventually went through the room where Lori Andrus's 2-year-old baby was sleeping. And that became the subject of some concern for the neighbors, and the neighbors got together and decided they wanted to bring this issue to the City Council, to the Citizens Police Review Board, and most important, since those two bodies don't seem to be doing anything about the shooting of innocent citizens, to the community. And that is what I'm doing here today on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I'm going to be shortly playing an interview we did yesterday with Rick Peterson. Rick is a man who lives across the street, the father of RJ, young boy, young 8-year-old boy who saw the shooting, as well as Cherie Peterson, who also witnessed the shooting. We've played tapes about this in the past, and we're kind of, hopefully, a loop tape is circulating around this that the station plays at other times and then at this show here, Free Radio, Bathroom Spears Broadsides, is my twice-a-week show. And we've done that a little bit here, and hopefully you're going to be hearing more of it at other times. But now we have an interview that we took yesterday with Rick Peterson, who not only was outraged by what he saw when the police shot Andrus. He didn't see them shoot Andrus. It was actually his wife that did, but he showed up shortly thereafter. What he saw in terms of how Andrus was denied medical treatment. And Rick also interviewed the boys afterward to see if they saw any sign of Andrus striking police officers with a bat. And both the boys and the wife inside claimed that that did not happen. Now, Dominican Hospital, apparently, if you believe the Sentinel and Karen Clark, says it did happen. So we don't know yet what's going on. And hopefully some of this information will come out in the trial. Brian Andrus is charged with multiple felonies for striking an officer. The officers claimed they were disabled. They had to take a week off work. They were hurt, whereas Rick Peterson, who was there just after the shooting, and Cherie, his wife, and RJ all claimed that the officers were in fine shape. They didn't seem to be injured in any way. They didn't offer any medical treatment to Brian Andrus, who lay naked on the ground, bleeding to death at that point, although he didn't die eventually, though he did get into critical condition. We're going to hear an interview with Rick Peterson in a group that formed yesterday to try to get some action and try to alert the community to what's going on with the police department And apparently with the so-called guardians or overseers of the police department, the Citizens Police Review Board, and the city council, which supposedly should be keeping its eye on this situation. So why don't we start there? Why don't we begin with an interview here that I recorded yesterday with Father, a homemaker, and I guess worker in a legal office up in the Mid-Peninsula, Rick Peterson, who's discussing what happened that day. We asked him some questions to follow up on a prior interview, and this is what he told us. Aaron and Josh, Rick, what did they say? They were closer, right? They were actually on the sidewalk near the situation when the shooting happened.
Yes, they were.
Did they hear any conversation, any warnings to drop the bat? Do you remember asking them about
that? We didn't talk about that topic, but they definitely did mention that.
What did they say happened?
They said that, actually, they claimed that they didn't see, they saw him with the bat, but they didn't see him strike an officer. And both of them said that it must be true because the police said that they got struck by a bat, and they both claimed that they don't understand why the police would lie about that.
And did they see the police officers down on the ground, or didn't
no.
they, weren't they asked that question?
No, nobody saw them. I've talked to everybody. Nobody saw them on the ground.
So these two witnesses who were closer than RJ, who was on the porch across the street, did not see the police officers on the ground?
No, not at all. And I arrived right after that, and I definitely didn't see any officers down or injured. I saw all four of them. In fact, they were the ones telling me to get away, and none of them were injured.
And you also were telling me that when you were interviewed the next day by District Attorney Marty Crowell, that this district attorney made a surreptitious tape recording that you only discovered at toward the very end of the interview?
Yes, exactly, yes. And he sort of just slightly let me know that I was being recorded. He never did confirm that it was being recorded or asked me if it was being recorded.
How did he slightly let you know?
After I made some comments to him about the police and what I felt about the police, he turned up his yellow envelope just slightly, like on purpose, that he was showing me the recorder after I had made some comments that I assumed was off the record.
And how long did you talk to him before you discovered the conversation was being recorded?
Oh, maybe three or four minutes.
And how long was the total interview?
That's about it.
Okay.
No more than 5 minutes.
And I guess you're concerned that an interview with you is recorded without your consent or knowledge?
Exactly, yes.
You intend to make some kind of complaint about that?
Yes. Yes, I am going to.
What about are we aware that Brian Andrus was shot at any point in the back? Does that actually happen or not? Does anybody know about that?
That was in the papers.
Well, Karen Clark is not a reliable source.
In the rear leg and in the upper back, one shot.
The voice of Doug McGrath, who filed a complaint about this issue.
One shot in the front, and three hits in the back. But
again, Karen Clark, what are we going to do with that? But yeah, that might be the case.
Too bad we can't get the actual real evidence from the hospital without signatures, because that's so confidential.
And more so than that, I'd like to obtain the medical reports of the officer that got struck.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a key question, because you would have to have Dominican Hospital falsifying information about two officers being hurt, and that
exactly.
I regard that as unlikely. But I mean, what do I know? But no one yet that we know of has seen any officers injured. Could they have been injured at a time when no one was looking?
Well, when I arrived on the scene, all four officers were there, and they were all yelling at me to remove myself from the scene. And at that time, I did not realize that there was a bat involved. I didn't see a baseball bat. And most definitely none of the officers were injured.
So in other words, though we later saw a metallic-looking bat on the grass next to the path near the Andrus residence, when you were there and you were pretty close in the scene, you saw no such bat?
I saw no baseball bat. None.
Possibly you would have overlooked it in the confusion?
It's highly unlikely. I was within a foot of him. And I only got to stay there for about 30 seconds until they chased me away, but I saw no baseball bat, and I also saw no injured officers at all.
So Lori Anderson said there was no baseball bat that she saw. On the other hand, your son and several of the other boys have said they did see him swinging a bat, though not close enough to an officer to actually physically menace the officer.
Yeah, that's true. Lori claims that she didn't see him with the baseball bat either. I talked to her, and she didn't see a baseball bat. In fact, she asked me if I saw the baseball bat, and I didn't see a baseball bat.
Sheree, did you see the baseball bat?
No, I didn't.
Would you have been in a position to see it, or would that have been during the interval when you were not watching?
It's possible. When I saw Brian standing on the sidewalk as he was being shot, I didn't see him with a baseball bat.
Really? Did you have a clear view of his hands?
I don't really recall his hands. I just could see that as I looked across the street, I recognized that it was Brian, and Brian being shot.
When you left the scene, was he outside? Previously, when you went back to deal with the safety of your children, had he emerged from the house before, at that point, or was he still in the house?
I don't recall.
You remember what you saw more or less before you left? What's the last thing you remember before you left the scene briefly?
The officers arriving at the apartment.
Right, so he wasn't out yet at that point.
No, he was not. Okay. And then when I went back onto the front porch is when I saw the officers further down the sidewalk and Brian right in front of his apartment on the sidewalk being gunned down.
So it's been a month since this happened, and you still seem to feel quite as strongly about it as you did the day it happened.
Yes, it was a hard thing to have to witness.
And your son has had some difficulty dealing with it, right?
Oh, yes. It's been rather hard on him, and he is a little scared at this point.
And you feel sufficiently strongly about it that you've called a meeting today here in your household and invited, I guess, the couple that filed the complaint against the police department for this kind of, I guess...
Who's this?
So, Doug, you would call this an excessive force complaint that you filed?
It was an excessive force. In the beginning, I was just, wanted to express my belief that, if police want to start shooting people, that's fine. For the citizenry to help us and protect us. But if they can't tell the truth about it and be open, I want to make sure that they bring this to the light of day, so they don't just start arbitrarily shooting because they can get away with it.
And Marilyn, what was the nature of your complaint?
It was the same as Doug's. I have a concern that if this is how everything is being dealt with now, they're trained to keep the peace, not create havoc and make the situation worse. There are alternatives that they could have used. And I feel like that they, we all know that they had to make a judgment call in a split second. Maybe they didn't.
You know her?
Yeah.
But we're not even being allowed to know all the information. It seems like there's a hush over the whole thing. And it seems like they need to review.
You don't have to speak.
Check themselves. Review how they're doing things. It seems like there would be would have been a lot easier way of, more peaceful way of solving this.
Thank you.
And those were some interviews made yesterday at the Button Street neighbors meeting. Actually, as fate would have it, arriving at the studio now is a voice you just heard on the tape, that of Doug McGrath. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Doug, you I guess, he originally filed a complaint, within a week after the shooting? Week or two, something like that?
About a week. It was after I saw the article by Ms. Wong that included testimony from Lori Andrus, and I had started realizing, a little bit of how the first article had tinted my viewpoint on the matter, and I kind of thought it was kind of almost even humorous, and they had a tough-looking picture of him in the paper and everything, and I could see the possibility of all the things happening.
Let me clarify this. The first article on the shooting that came out was The shooting happened in mid-March on a Sunday, and the first article that came out was by Karen Clark, Sentinel reporter, who, I guess the headline of the article, I'm going to find it here in the file, Santa Cruz officers shoot bat-wielding man. And there's a picture of three officers at the door of a house right next to a kind of a white fence. And it claims four city police officers answered a domestic violence call Sunday evening, shot and wounded a man after he struck two of them with a baseball bat. So there's the allegation that police officers were struck. This is the second time in 4 months that Santa Cruz police officers have been involved in a shooting. On November 13th, Live Oak resident John Dine was killed on Front Street after brandishing a realistic-looking toy gun at two officers. Notice, interesting enough, this was the story put out by Police Chief Belcher and District Attorney Art Danner that Dine was brandishing a toy gun. But it was not the story which the Police Review Board decided was the true one. They claimed that he was reaching for a weapon. There's a considerable difference, of course, between these two things, but Karen Clark seems to prefer the police department story, and apparently so does the police department, because when I wrote Chief Belcher 2 weeks ago requesting confirmation of whether the police department still held by this story, he said nothing whatsoever. And I guess I assume the police department is still maintaining its original story that Dine was brandishing a weapon. But getting back to Button Street, I don't want to stray too far from that, and the shooting of Brian Andrus. And we're reading from the Santa Cruz County Sentinel of Monday, March 16th of last month. In Sunday's incident, the wounded man, Brian Andrus, 33, of Santa Cruz, underwent surgery at San Jose Medical Center and was listed in fair condition at 10 p.m., 4 hours after the shooting outside his Button Street apartment. Now, that, of course, later changed to serious and to critical, and eventually he survived, and I've seen him twice in a wheelchair, rolled into court. His arraignment was delayed because, as I said before, police failed to provide the copies of statements from the four police officers, three of whom were directly involved in the shooting, and the fourth, Gerazio, who was involved in breaking into the house, into Lori Andrus and Brian Andrus's apartment. The reports were delayed. I think they finally got the reports after overstaying the deadline that Judge Robert Attic had mandated. He'd said, get those reports to the defense, the police reports from the officers. They're generally the first thing. They're written within hours after the shooting, and why they were not available for a month has led to some nasty speculation that perhaps these folks are trying to get their stories together. But, you know, that's speculation. All we know is that it was irregular, improper procedure for the police not to have these reports available, and perhaps that will be the basis of a subsequent complaint to the Citizens Police Review Board, that the police reports were not available for the defense, or, you know, for the CPRB, or for the Internal Affairs Department of the Police Department, which actually is the group that makes the original investigation. Now, it's interesting that may be one of the reasons that the Internal Affairs Department did not review your complaint, Doug, because they did not have, or did not want to say they had, the police reports at that time. What do you think of that idea?
I'm not real sure. I'm pretty vague, and I'm not sure where we are. I'm sorry I got here late. There's a lot of discrepancies.
Well, let me return to this one, because this is actually one that's just occurred to me. We were concerned that the reports that police officers write out about an incident, and certainly about a shooting incident, these happen within hours after the police, come off duty. They go and they write their reports, and the reports become a part of the record. Why these reports were not available to the defense counsel, the attorney John Thornton, who's the attorney for Brian Andrus, a full 4 weeks later, to me is very suspicious, or certainly very strange. And you kind of link that up with the fact that Police Chief Belcher received your complaint and said, oh, we can't really review this complaint because it's too vague, because it doesn't involve a specific person, because it doesn't deal with a policy. In fact, we're going to read your complaint over, and the audience, you, the listening audience, can decide whether you think Doug's complaint is too vague. It's really kind of academic, because he's going to, I guess, go in tomorrow and file a second complaint that's clearer. But I find it interesting the complaint was delayed. Could that have been because Police Chief Belcher did not want to show those reports to the Internal Affairs Bureau of his police department, and so, in so doing, maybe incriminate certain officers or produce embarrassing questions later? We'll see. In any case, wow, what's this? I see Doug has just handed me a photo of two female police officers. What is this photo about, Doug?
This is a photo of my sister who's now, she's taken the detective exam for Austin City Police Department in Texas City Police. This is a photo of her in 91 when I was down there. She received the Top Cop Award for the Austin City Police Department. She's been a police officer for 8 years now and has done some weapons training and procedure training, a lot of different training in the academy there in Austin, Texas. And she's very professional.
So we're not really dealing with an anti-police person, Doug. And you've actually never filed a complaint before about police misconduct in Santa Cruz, have you?
No, I've never been treated improperly at all. I say yes, sir, and no, sir, a lot. And though I don't get back, I used to drink a bit. I don't do that, so I don't really have to confront him any longer. And
it's certainly fair to say that you haven't, you know, got a. Well, do you have a prejudice against the police? Are you angry with the Santa Cruz police? Do you have any criticism for them other than this incident?
No, not really. You know, even I understand there's a lot of different things. Even my partner who filed the other complaint, her son-in-law is a police officer in this county for 7 or 8 years, and that's as specific as I want to get. He's very professional also. There are some professional police officers. I'm aware of the necessity of police officers. And I personally, you know, believe in proper necessary use of deadly force. That may be contrary to a lot of people's opinions, but from the eyewitness testimony I heard with you yesterday, that's just not what happened on Button Street. It's not even close.
Well, that's that's the witnesses we've heard so far, and of course we haven't heard all of them. I think there's supposedly a woman who they got to drag somebody into court who's going to testify to the Brian Andrews striking the officers with a bat. I mean, I guess the police officers themselves can testify, and maybe that will be sufficient, because as we saw in the case of Happy John Dine, there were two police officers, Officer Connor Carey, who shot Dine, and Officer Over, his partner, and then, of course, the man they had with them, Ben Newman, the complaining witness, who some claimed had been engaging in harassment against Dine in the past, and that the catalyst which he worked for had barred Dine from the sidewalk and so forth. Some claimed that the police witnesses were all they had in the Dine case, and that apparently was enough for the Citizen Police Review Board. But of course, Citizen Police Review Board found that Dine was properly killed or properly shot by Officer Connor Carey. Again, we've covered those discrepancies at length, and I believe that issue will probably come up again tomorrow, because I know one man who is filing a new complaint in the Happy John Dine case, Warren West, a homeless friend of Happy John's, who had lunch with Happy John the day of the shooting and claimed that in his pocket was not a gun, but was instead a small radio about the same size, which Happy John carried with him. I saw Happy John frequently with that radio. Whether he had it hours later when the police shot him dead, when Officer Connor Carey fired two bullets into him, is a question I don't know the answer to. But I do know that according to Becky Johnson, who's with Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure and has read over the report, with the district attorney's report on the John Dine slaying, which is in the library, the radio was not found at the scene, but a battery cover to the radio was found at the scene, which sounds rather peculiar. So anyway, there's all kinds of peculiarities here that we need to go into, and I wish we had a proper board to do it. What we've got, as I said, we were reviewing several stories that came out in the Sentinel, and the first story, as I read you, was Karen Clark's story the day after Brian Andrus was shot in March, on March 16th. And the second story was a rather more extensive story, March 17th, by another reporter, Mae Wong. And I guess it was this second story, Doug, that kind of caught your eye and made you decide, you and Marilyn decide to file complaints?
Yes, and we happen to be in the area. I was really surprised that no one else complained about it. They're starting to shoot people in Santa Cruz just way too often. And then all of a sudden the stories are getting real vague. You know, and the eyewitness testimony that we heard yesterday from one of them that is on the affidavit, I believe the police is one of the testimonies we had to kind of stop personally interviewing him. He's very young. He's 8 years old. It was sad to hear what he had to see. And then we went from his affidavit then because, you know, it's just out of respect. It was very, it's kind of, his parents, you know, saw, it was a balcony seat right there. It was not the same story.
We spoke yesterday to R.J. Peterson, the 8-year-old son of Rick and Cherie Peterson, who talked about what he saw. And I haven't played that on the air because most of it was not recorded, and also because we actually were, hopefully at some point we'll be reading to you the actual affidavit that, I don't know if it's actually an affidavit, but the statement made by R.J. Peterson to the